Okay, we're going to talk about UFOs, aliens, and supernatural flying objects. The term UFO that is commonly thrown around technically means unidentified flying object. And so that could really be anything. But of course, when we talk about UFOs, we're talking about aliens, perhaps, right? Or perhaps angels or demons. There's a lot of opinions running around that there may be these visitors from other planets, other dimensions, etc. And so the question is, what does the Bible say about this? Well, that's going to be depending on how you look at it. If we're going to talk about aliens, the Bible, as far as life forms on other planets, which we presume God also created, the universe is filled with many galaxies of stars. And who's to say that the Lord God has not created other worlds like Earth in which other beings like humans live? I mean, we really can't say. You consider the fact that they're so remote and distant from us that communication, let's say, with someone living in another galaxy would be extremely difficult if you didn't know exactly where they were. Or I should say, exactly where they will be when your communication signal hits them, as far as based on the technology that we would have at our disposal. And I guess that leads me into the thought, and I'm sort of just plunging right into there. We're going to cover some scriptures, of course, but I'm also going to kind of talk off the top of my head because this is a subject that we don't have a lot of scriptures to help us. But we certainly can say that the scriptures don't rule out the possibility of a life on other planets. There's no reason we should presume that we are alone in the universe. Certainly we're not alone in the sense that we know that God is out there. And whether or not there are other creatures like us or different from us, we don't know. We can be fairly certain that there are no aliens on Mars or on any of the planets near Earth. We've kind of looked around and that possibility has been kind of ruled out. So the question of aliens goes to visitors from distant galaxies or distant planets within the galaxy, but from very, very far away. And the Bible does not address whether or not those beings could exist. So if we're going to talk about those kind of creatures, we're going to talk about it from a speculative point of view. I just want to say, coming out the gate, that no one has to agree with me on this, right? I'm just giving my opinion, as someone who has studied the scriptures for years, on what could be. I think it's a sound biblical opinion, but anything that goes beyond that, if you feel more strongly in one particular way or the other, we can still have fellowship with each other. But I would caution anyone not to get too wrapped up in these kinds of doctrines. Especially when it becomes a doctrine. It's one thing to be like, yeah, I like to think about whether or not there are aliens on other planets. I like to think about whether or not those unidentified flying objects might be angelic. It's one thing to speculate, but having no sure word, every case has to be judged on its own merits. And that sort of goes into the idea of UFO. It's unidentified. For example, a few years ago, there was a sighting of a UFO in Jerusalem. Right, it was over the Dome of the Rock, and the light shot up in the sky. There was a fake version of the same thing. But the actual one, the one that is supposedly genuine, was taken from three different camera angles by different parties who caught it on video. And at the time, I thought that was very interesting. But still, I got nothing really in the Bible to tell me what I should think that is. There's nothing even in the occurrence itself that could prove to me one way or the other. Was it one, possibly a fake, two, some sort of technology, some sort of new human-made high-speed drone technology that can almost, that can move like that fast, because it shoots up into the air at an incredible rate of speed. So there's that question. Is this man-made? Some new technology that's top secret? Could it be an alien device of some sort? Because the Jerusalem UFO was a pretty, it seemed to be like a light-based phenomenon, and it was kind of small. It was bright and small, but it didn't seem like some big vehicle passing over Jerusalem. And, of course, the possibility that it could have been some sort of angelic or demonic thing. In considering any of those options, you have to kind of think about, well, why? Why would whoever's responsible for this do it? And I guess that's why people probably are very likely to think it's a hoax, because the greatest motivation to do such a thing would be to cause a stir. It's funny that you would think that aliens, which possess apparently the technology to cross the galaxy, to generally hide themselves, because you got to figure if they're appearing over the Dome of the Rock, they're doing that on purpose. Like they're there allowing themselves to be seen. You know, they don't have to let us see them. And that's obvious because, you know, a lot of people don't even believe in UFOs, right? So if they do exist, they have some sort of ability or technology to hide themselves. Now, the fact that they're using that to hide themselves, yet people still see them, means you have to consider that you have something going on where they are letting themselves be seen, but they don't have to be seen. And on the other hand, they're not communicating with us wholesale. Meaning, it seems odd that an intelligent life form, like a human being or something, would cross the galaxy and not attempt to contact us. Or, you know what I mean, like with some sort of radio signal or some sort of beacon of communication of some sort. And I suppose, you know, UFO experts might argue about that, and I'm sure they have all kinds of explanations. I'm just saying, we have to keep a skeptical mind, because I very much doubt that anyone can explain every phenomenon with one explanation. Because sometimes unidentified flying objects are just military vehicles, because someone sees something in the sky. Sometimes unidentified flying objects may be just some human test aircraft or something, meaning someone sees something in the sky and they think it's an alien ship, but it's really just a drone or some sort of experimental aircraft or who knows what. Not every sighting of a UFO is going to be an alien aircraft or an angelic phenomenon or experimental aircraft. It's very unlikely that every single one of these is going to be explained by just one answer, because there's so many UFO sightings. I used to listen to the program Coast to Coast AM, you know, where they talk about a lot of these. They have the UFO experts, quote unquote, come on. And they talk about UFOs, and they have a lot to say. And it's funny that you have all these different UFO experts on, and they all have very different opinions. It's almost like religion. And so whatever any one person has to say has to be sort of judged. And so it becomes a very complicated subject. Unless you just decide, hey, I'm going to take an overall simplified solution. It's all delusional. And that's easy to sort of take that skeptical route. A hyper-skeptical route. I prefer to maintain a sort of moderately skeptical. I don't know what they are. Some of them I do think, I've seen things that if they are not a hoax, it may be that there is something either alien or angelic at work. But again, one would have to ask the question, why? You know, if the angels are not allowed to reveal themselves to us very often, why would they reveal themselves in just this shining, pulsating light in the sky, or by a rapidly moving vehicle through the sky, or, you know, people say vehicles, but we don't know that necessarily it's a vehicle. It could be just some sort of bright thing, object in the sky. It might be some pure energy up there. I mean, we don't know, and that's the whole idea behind unidentified. But what does the Bible say? Well, there are flying objects in the Bible. And oftentimes, these passages are used by some teachers to explain UFOs. Even if you accept these as explanations for UFOs, it would be unwise to assume that they explain all UFOs. You see what I'm saying? That there may be an instance of a UFO sighting that's just, it's just a mistake, case of mistaken identity. And that's where the original idea came from, the fact that airplanes, when they fly, they file flight plans. And when you see something in the sky, if you're a flight controller or some other official personnel for tracking that stuff, every flight, every object in the sky should be able to be connected with some sort of identity. Well, that's flight XYZ4321. That's Cessna over there. That's, you know, they're able to track these things because it's important. We don't want mid-air collisions. And whenever an unidentified object appears, it's questionable. And it was important militarily, especially during the Cold War, because that would be suspected to be a Russian plane or something like that. And so also during the Cold War, a lot of American spy planes that were being tested ended up being labeled as UFOs. And of course, the government isn't going to say necessarily to civilian flight controllers, oh, that's one of our secret airplanes you got there. They're just going to have no comment. And sometimes it serves the purposes to just allow people to think that. In the scriptures, the most common passages I recall, because I had a teacher originally, Arnold Murray, who was very much believed in that the scripture had accounts of UFOs, and that UFOs, in as much as we talk about flying alien craft, are actually angelic craft. And he would cite passages such as Ezekiel chapter 1. Now, Ezekiel chapter 1, we have Ezekiel describing a vision of the throne of God. Let's pick it up in verse 3. The word of the Lord came expressly unto Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar. And the hand of the Lord was there upon him. And I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, out of the midst thereof, as the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. Now, the first thing he would have said in that verse is the color of amber is, if you look it up in a Strong's Concordance, would refer to highly polished bronze. But that's a reference to the color. It doesn't necessarily mean it was made out of bronze, and I don't even think he'd have a problem with that, because it's unlikely that he would make a spacecraft out of bronze. It's just that this was written in a time when bronze was a common metal. The language was derived during the Bronze Age. And so the color being described is according to what the way they saw color. You know, like we might say, oh, it's, you know, blood red or grass green or whatever. So when he says whirlwind, the idea is that it's some sort of whirling circular object, according to some people. I don't know that that's such a good interpretation. We also have fire. What's interesting to me, like you look at things like the Jerusalem UFO, it didn't seem to be whirling at all. It didn't seem to be spinning at all. And I don't know of any spinning, whirling UFOs generally. That is something that was sort of an image that comes from science fiction, I think from the 50s and so on, where they had the UFO actually kind of spinning there. But I don't know of any, but in any case, you know, you think about helicopters, they have spinning propellers and stuff. But a truly futuristic craft would not necessarily rely on some sort of rotational thing. And I tend to think of this as a sort of a supernatural thing, and not so much as a technological thing. You know, God doesn't need aircrafts. God can materialize from one end of the universe to the other, if he so desired. He could be anywhere at any time, and at all places at all times. But let's continue reading what it says in Ezekiel. Verse 5 says, also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. So out of the midst of the fire came this amber color. There's kind of a run-on sentence almost. I looked and behold a whirlwind out of the north, a great cloud, a fire going in on itself, and a brightness all about it, and out of the midst thereof, as the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. There's a cloud, which indicates some sort of opacity. The fact that he describes the fire as enfolding itself is kind of specific. It doesn't sound to me just like a bright star-like beacon. And I think back to that Jerusalem UFO, for instance, where it was just a shining white light. It looked like a star almost, but way too close and obviously too small to be an actual star. But it looked like a shining, bright, pulsating, gently object. And so who could say what that was, but it doesn't seem to match this. Became the likeness of four living creatures out of this. They have the likeness of a man. They looked humanoid. They had four faces, four wings, verse 6. Their feet were straight feet. The sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot. And they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. You know, these references to metallic colors and stuff lead some people to think that there is a metal vehicle involved. And I don't know that that's the right assumption to make. They have the hands of a man under their wings on four sides. They have wings. And wings doesn't necessarily mean like bird wings. We have like airplane wings. And anything extending out from a central location, like armies have wings. And so anything sort of spread out like that could be referred to as a wing. But they have a humanoid appearance. They have four faces, each of them, and four wings. Verse 8, and they had the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and they four had their faces of their wings. Their wings were joined together, one to another. They turned not when they went every one straight forward. They did not turn. So as far as the whirlwind, I don't know if that means what he meant by whirlwind. The idea of a whirlwind, do we interpret that literally? Now, how much of this do we interpret literally and what? Obviously, he's describing something he's seeing, whether it be in vision or literally. And he says, the word of the Lord came unto me, and this is what he saw. A whirlwind out of the north. A whirlwind is a very common kind of prophetic device. You think about Jeremiah 23. Behold, a whirlwind of the Lord has gone forth in fury, even a torturous whirlwind, which means a twisting. And it shall fall twisting tortuously on the head of the wicked. Behold, the anger of the Lord has gone forth, and it shall not return till he have executed, till he have performed the thoughts of his heart. Prophetically, the whirlwind going forth is often a symbolic of God's judgment going forth against the wicked to destroy them. And so when Ezekiel sees the whirlwind of the Lord, you know, that has a common prophetic thread that stretches back to other prophets. And therefore, the idea that this is referring to some sort of whirling vehicle, at least here, doesn't seem to me to be a very solid interpretation. It's like God's storm, so to speak. A cloud and fire and smoke enfolding itself. They don't turn when they go, though. And that gets the idea of like, yeah, you could imagine like that they do not rotate to face which way they want to go. They just go, meaning that there's not necessarily any sort of spin on their motion. And they don't turn, like if you have a car, right? When you want to turn it, you have to literally turn the whole thing so it goes forwards. And you have to turn the front of the car so it's pointing the way you want to go. This vehicle is more like a mouse, which is always facing the same direction, no matter which way you want to put it. You know, you just hold it straight forward, and if you want to go right, you just move it to the right. You want to go left, you move it to the left. So they move in that manner. They move in that manner. And now the description of their faces, verse 10, they have the face of a man, the face of a lion on the right side, the face of an ox, the face of an eagle. That corresponds to what you read of them in the book of Revelation. Their wings were stretched upward, two wings every side, everyone joined to another, and the two covered their bodies. I've always had trouble visualizing all this, because I don't really know what he means. Whether I should be picturing bird wings or what. Or if he's looking at something structural. Because they are living creatures, yet they are always associated with God and his throne. They went everyone straight forward. Wherever the Spirit was to go, they went. They turned on when they went. So they went according to the Spirit. It makes me wonder, you know, why does he say that? Does that negate the idea of mechanical means? You know, it's a spiritually driven motion, not one driven by normal flesh and blood means. Verse 13, as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like the burning coals of fire, like the appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright. And out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of the flash of lightning. They moved very quickly. At least that's the way it sounds to me. Right? There went forth lightning. So there's lightning involved here. This, what Ezekiel is seeing, I never see similar things reported when it comes to UFOs. All right? Now, when we continue to read in verse 15, it says, now I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. And the appearance of the wheels and their work was likened to the color of a barrel. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance was the work as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. There was a wheel in a wheel. But again, at what angle were they put towards each other? I don't really understand still what he saw. And this appearance of wheels has led a lot of people to think, oh, there's flying saucers involved. Well, perhaps there are. But there's a lot more to this than just these wheels. Right? There are wheels involved. But is it wheels? You know, did he describe first, I saw coming out of the north, wheels. And the wheels opened up, and inside we saw this other stuff. No, the wheels are in the midst of all this lightning and smoke and fire. Now here's an interesting aspect. When they went on their four sides. They turn out when they went, meaning they went from side to side into whatever motion they went without turning. Their rings were so high that they were dreadful. I don't know what that means. The rings were full of eyes round about them four. Now I've heard that said, oh, that's portals. Is it? You know, we were looking out of portals. Would they even have to? You know, portals, that kind of goes back to science fiction. It's like, do they, you know, if they have the technology to cross the world, do they need portals in their side? They have little glass windows, circles, like we have on our ships of the sea? Or would they be able to see outside the skin of their ship? Would they want to have, you know, I think that's very questionable whether that is. Though the description of them as an eye may refer to something that is looked out of, all right? I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm just saying you got to maintain a sort of even mind. This is a very incredible description, right? Very unique even in the scriptures, right? And so jumping to conclusions over what you read here and say, oh, this is all about UFOs, is not a very advisable thing. You know, you got to withhold judgment. Because someone's going to tell me they know all what this is about. You got to be skeptical. Because I don't know. I am pretty good at reading. And this description is difficult. He was seeing something quite remarkable. Whenever you have something remarkable, giving a verbal description of it, limited by the language you have, it'd be very easy for us to say, oh, I saw a UFO. You know, it was a flying saucer. Right? But think about how that would sound to someone who didn't really know what we were talking about. A flying saucer. Imagine if you said, and I beheld a dish in the sky. You know, I mean, so yeah, it definitely lends itself to that kind of assumption that, yeah, we may be talking about some sort of disc-shaped flying thing. But like I said, it's not just a disc. We got lightning, we got smoke, we got fire, we got creatures. We got these rings up high, so dreadful. You know, which is to be interpreted of which? What exactly we're seeing is a little bit difficult. Verse 20 is interesting. Whithersoever the Spirit was to go, they went. Verse 19. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the Spirit was to go, they went.
Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. Now, they say, aha, they were riding inside these vehicles. I don't think that's really what he's saying. Because I think he saw the living creatures outside the wheels. But that the wheels, that the spirit of the creatures inhabited the wheels also, so the wheels went with the living creatures. The living creatures that he describes with their wings and their legs are not in the wheels. The spirit of the creature is in the wheel, but the appearance of the creatures is outside the wheel. So you have these creatures, humanoid in appearance, but also having the appearance of the ox, the eagle, the man, and the lion in their faces. So, you know, there's more to it than just like a flying saucer comes down and out jump these creatures. You know, yes, the spirit is in the wheels and the wheels are with the creatures, but whether or not the wheels are sort of the chariots of the gods is entirely a question which is, you know, saying that is highly speculative. This is not a sure interpretation once you go down that road. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them. For the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. He repeated that twice. They were connected to each other. They moved with each other. They were not separate. So the action of the wheels was the same as the action of the creatures. The creatures moved and the wheels moved. The spirit was in the wheel. But it does not say the creatures themselves were in the wheel. And the likeness of the firmament upon the heads of the living creatures was as the color of the terrible crystal stretched forth over their heads above. Again, he's describing the color. I don't know what the terrible crystal, I honestly haven't looked that up. I'm not a scholar of Hebrew, and I'm not really interested in that. He's referring to the color. So whatever color it is irrelevant. Blue, green, clear. The question is, can we identify this positively as the things people observe when they say they see UFOs? And I say, I don't think so. This seems quite unique. Obviously, the idea of a firmament over, you know, you can imagine they're looking inside and they see a firmament. It could be much bigger in wheels. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could read this and still come up with some sort of plausible UFO scenario, right? But there are a lot of problems with that interpretation. For one, like I said, it doesn't necessarily match up with what people say they see when they see UFOs. For two, skip down to verse 24. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings, like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of a host. When they stood, they let down their wings. UFOs are usually described as being pretty quiet, as far as I know. That's a big blow. This is a noisy thing, Ezekiel's saying. Very noisy. And that alone creates problems with the UFO scenario. The UFOs are usually described as sort of running silent, running and hidden. This is quite a noisy visual display that is supposed to catch Ezekiel's attention. It's a vision of the Almighty. Very noisy. Verse 25, and there was a voice from the firmament that was over their head. There's an expanse, a firmament over their heads, and there's a voice from the firmament. And above the firmament that was over their heads, so we have the you know, I can see the living creatures, and they have wheels, and then there's this thing over them. You know, the creatures are round about the throne in the book of Revelation, and there's an expanse of it, and then upon the expanse is a throne. And this all seems to be exposed. This doesn't seem like something that's inside of a vehicle, but rather that the wheels are a part of this. You know what I'm saying? The wheels are with the creatures, and there's an expanse over them, and then over the expanse, there's a throne. So I see like the wheels, the creatures, and then on over that all is this expanse, this firmament, and on top of that is the likeness of a throne. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And what I saw is the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it. From the appearance of his loins, even upward, from the appearance of his loins, even downward, I saw the appearance of fire. And it had brightness round about. It was fire and bright. As the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so is the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face. And I heard a voice of one that spake. So, here we have the Ezekiel passage. It is a vision of the throne of God. And the literalness of it is certainly to be, questionable. Meaning, whether he saw this in vision as God showing himself to Ezekiel, or whether God literally came down on the earth and appeared, there would be really no difference, honestly. Because what God shows in vision is real. Because in a sense, all the world he shows us is only as real as he is. It is all a revelation that God has given. The reality of the world around us, and even the reality of anything he might put into our minds. So I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying, would other people in the area have seen it? I don't think so. I think only Ezekiel would have seen this. Because it would only be revealed to him. And that's what I'm saying, is that it maybe necessarily wouldn't be seen by all the people around, but to Ezekiel it was seen. And that's that's not that unusual. Like in 2 Samuel 22, or actually in 2 Kings 2, Elijah said to Elisha, "If you see me, go up." And there was a question of whether or not Elisha would be able to see Elijah go up. It also reminds me of Paul when the Lord Jesus appeared to him. No one else heard the voice that he heard. They said it thundered. They heard a booming sound, but they didn't hear the voice of words that he heard. So what appears to the prophet may not always appear to everyone else around. But when Elijah went up to heaven by a whirlwind, and it was said, chariots and horses. Now I've heard that also described as vehicles. But again, yes, a chariot is a vehicle. But it talks about chariots of fire, horses of fire. And whether or not that would be the same thing is very unlikely. What Ezekiel described is very different from what is described in 2 Kings chapter 2, which is basically just chariots of fire and horses of fire. If God wanted to take up a prophet in this age, maybe he would send a flaming helicopter, for all we know. But it would be flaming so as to show that it was supernatural, that it was not just some chariot came along and picked Elijah up. No, a flaming chariot came out of the heavens and took him away. So those are the basic passages that are used. Like I said at the beginning, a UFO could be anything. For example, let's think of the Star of Bethlehem in terms of a UFO. The Magi from the east saw this star, they called it, in the east, and they followed it. A lot of astronomical scholars have pointed out that, there is no real recorded signs in the heavens around the time that Jesus was born. Usually when, astronomers point out stuff, they'll talk about the conjunction of Venus that was going on at that time. And while that's a possible explanation, the scriptures do not direct us necessarily to presume that. And it's wrong of us to read our terminology into their terminology. Meaning, they say it was a star. Well, then should we say it couldn't be a planet? Because in the ancient times, they referred to the planets as wandering stars in the sky. And when I was a kid, we referred to meteors coming into the atmosphere. We referred to those as shooting stars. What is a star but to an earthbound observer, a bright object in the sky? The Jerusalem UFO gave every appearance of being a star. It was a white, shining light. And it appeared to everyone. What I'm suggesting about the Star of Bethlehem may be that it was not observable to everyone necessarily, but only to those whom the vision was to be revealed. Meaning God revealed to the Magi this glowing star in the east, and they followed it. And it would be revealed to them but not necessarily to other people. Just as Paul heard the voice of the Lord, and just as Elisha and Elijah saw the chariots of God, but other people in the area would not necessarily see them. Just as I was saying with the vision of Ezekiel. So you could treat the Star of Bethlehem as a sort of UFO. It's an unidentified object in the sky. Yes, it's identified as a star. But again, using that terminology is not necessarily answering the full question of what it is. That's what the Magi called it. That's the word in the human language for a bright object in the sky. Wandering stars, falling stars, because they look like stars, and from the surface of the earth, they are apparently stars. They appear to be similar to a star. So that's another possible UFO sighting in the Bible. Obviously, that one would not be aliens, but it would be a sign from God. And as I was saying, a UFO could be anything. And while the Bible does have various objects that fly in the sky, none of them would be considered alien spacecraft. And so, like I have said, it is incorrect to apply one explanation to everything that is called a UFO. You know, angels are described as flying occasionally, and they have wings occasionally, and they're described as burning and bright. And so, obviously, when there are bright objects observed by men, it is very natural for some people to suppose those might be angels or demons even. And I don't know. You know, I've never seen a UFO in person. I've never seen anything like that. Now, I've seen shooting stars, very bright ones, in fact, at times, right? I've seen light ones, bright ones. I've seen, like I said, the Jerusalem object was the most interesting thing I'd ever seen, but I don't know what to make of it. It could be almost anything. It could be any one of the above things I described, either a secret Israeli military device. It could be some sort of demon, angel, or even alien. So what are we to think about it? Well, I tell you, my instinct is to, one, I don't worry about it. I don't worry about aliens. I believe in God very solidly. And I think that any alien that existed would be under God's dominion. It's not going to be, you know, like, I know that a lot of people who believe in aliens and who are agnostics or atheists, you know, think the aliens are going to come here and teach us that there's no God. And I'm not really worried about that. You know, if aliens exist, they probably have atheists too. Doesn't mean they wouldn't have necessarily the very same beliefs we do. I wouldn't know. You know, and I really think that in as much as the Lord has made the world so distant from each other, that communication with other races that God may have created on other planets is probably not going to happen. Not in the flesh. You know, maybe God is bringing all the worlds into his kingdom at the same time. And so maybe those other worlds are at the same stage we are. I wouldn't know. It would all be speculation. I certainly would not fear them. I remember as a child, I think there was nothing I found more terrifying than the thought of aliens landing in the park across the street from where I lived and coming and taking me away. For me as a child, alien abduction was one of the most frightening thoughts I ever had, because it seemed like they could just come out of the sky and take me away from my family and no one would even know. I think the movie Close Encounters planted that seed in my mind. A lot of people claim to have been abducted by aliens. I don't know anything about it. And they have a lot of different fantastic claims. I would say that any claim that specifically contradicts what Scripture has taught me concerning Jesus Christ, the resurrection of the dead, and who we ought to have faith in, I reject it. And I don't know what they saw or who told them what. Maybe it's demonic. Maybe it's a lying spirit. Maybe they're just a liar. Maybe not. Maybe something happened. Maybe, who knows? But I can't judge it because I have no basis on which to judge it. I have no firm foundation. I can't prove whether what they're saying is true or not. You know, they could say anything. Some people, believe it or not, will do anything for attention. And I don't want to just write people off. I want to believe people when they say things have happened. I don't know anyone who's actually been abducted. I do know anecdotally, I don't know personally anyone who's ever encountered a UFO. But I knew a guy whose father was an atheist and who had seen a UFO, so he believed. And he wondered about that. He's like, it's funny, my dad never believed in anything, but he saw something. But again, it's something. He wouldn't know what to make of that necessarily. It seems odd to me that aliens would travel across the universe, come here, and then just silently watch us. What can we say about things like that? What possible motive could they have for doing that? I would say that if aliens were watching us quietly, that would either indicate some sort of benevolence. Because I think if they were our enemies, they would already have us enslaved. If they have the technology to hide from us and not, you know, us detect them or be able to shoot them down, I would think that would mean that we would have absolutely no way to resist them and they would absolutely dominate us. And what fear would they have in contacting us? I don't know. You know, it's always easy for someone who has a particular point of view to offer a just-so explanation. You raise a question like, why would they do it this way? And they say, well, because they want to observe us and they don't want this and that and the other. You know, and it's so easy to just sort of make an explanation that just fits perfectly. Isn't that perfect? But that doesn't mean anything. It's still just pure speculation. There's no way to prove any of that. You can't trust just-so explanations, these ad hoc, manufactured explanations which are meant to deal with difficulties but have no real provenance. We can't know if that's really why they would do that. To me, it seems compelling that if you travel across the universe to find other civilizations, that you make contact. You just hide out and watch. I know the great prerogative, or what is it? Don't interfere with primitive cultures. That's out there in science fiction. You know why that's out there in science fiction? The rule that aliens have that they're not supposed to interfere with us? Because that's a just-so explanation for why they don't contact us. It's manifest. They don't talk to us. Not really. The idea that there's this massive cover-up, I don't buy it. You can't keep a secret like that. It would be out. And some people would say, oh, it is. It is out. It's out. Obviously, it's all over the radio. It's all over the TV. Yet somehow, they're all disagreeing. We don't get the same story. I don't really believe in aliens. I think it's a possibility. I certainly don't believe in it. Do I think angels are interfering? I tend to doubt that as well. If angels or evil spirits are interfering, they're already doing it, and they've been doing it the whole history of humankind. The idea that we would sort of accidentally see them, you know, if they are being withheld from bothering us, it's because God is restraining them. You know, he's not allowing them to have their way with us. I don't know. It is a very wide subject, and I sort of struggle with what to say about it. The Bible doesn't say much about it at all, and anything we think about it would be based on speculation. But my advice is basically take it all with a grain of salt. It's totally okay to listen to what people have to say about it. I just wouldn't take it too seriously. It's certainly any one opinion. I would not take any one opinion very seriously about this. There's a lot more important issues at hand. We need to be following the Lord Jesus Christ and conforming to his image. You know, because we want to inherit the resurrection from the dead. And then when that happens, all the questions we've ever had will be answered. I certainly don't think UFOs are anything for us to be worried about. I would be more worried about sin in our lives right now. That's much more troublesome. That's a much more pressing problem than what are the aliens who I've never seen in my life up to? What are the angels who I've never had contact me? Why are they contacting, you know, Jim Bob Smith over in, you know, in the middle of nowhere?
I live in the middle of nowhere, and I haven't seen any aliens out here. And also, you know, the idea that they appear in the middle of nowhere is obviously a bit of a myth, because that Jerusalem sighting was very prominent. But again, what was the purpose of that? Why would it just show up, allow itself to be seen in a very visible place? And this is several years ago. No great calamity followed. No great change has followed. Everything's pretty much going on the way it is. And at the time, people thought it was a really big deal. Well, we're 3-4 years down the road from that, and there's nothing. Nothing. People have been talking about UFOs the whole time I've been alive. They've been speculating and throwing all kinds of information out there, different opinions. They have all the different, there's reptile races, there's the gray aliens, there's the other kinds. They have all different kinds they split it up into. Based on what? What is it based on? Based on ancient records and possibilities. And I wouldn't trust any of it. As far as it's entertaining to listen to, it's thought-provoking, it's very interesting. There's nothing wrong with listening to it. It's definitely, I put it over, you know, I'd rather sit and listen to a bunch of UFO experts speculate about UFOs, which is interesting, than sit around and watch some situation comedy or some garbage reality TV show. I would definitely not get too opinionated about it. As far as a Christian goes, we have to submit ourselves to what God has revealed. And since He hasn't revealed much to us about this, there's not much to say. And it's also manifest that the UFOs themselves haven't revealed much about it to us. There are many subjects in the scriptures which have not a lot revealed about them, but men insist on forcing their opinions on people. Resist that. Don't let them push you around. Don't let them make you think things that are unproven based on the scriptures.